This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com.
You know, I have confessed to not being a digital native. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on Instagram, but I am on Facebook. And I did post on Facebook, I think last week, because I'd watched just the first three episodes of the R. Kelly documentary, Surviving R. Kelly. And it was a devastating experience. I forced myself to watch the rest of the documentary series. And
wait, Leslie, can you give some background just for people who
I'm about to.
Oh, pardon me.
Right? Sorry. No, that's okay. And so for me, what was so troubling to me wasn't what the documentary was showing about R. Kelly, right? Which, for those of you who don't know, R. Kelly was this R&B star who then like broke through and became a pop star. He also has, you know, his foot in the gospel world. And R. Kelly has for a very, very long time now, there have been rumors, first circulating, I think, primarily within the African-American community, but then, you know, sort of branched out into the broader community about R. Kelly's predilection for teenage girls. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first big breaking story about R. Kelly's predilection for teenage girls was when he married Aaliyah, who at the time was 15, which I did not know until I saw the documentary. It seemed that the reason why he married Aaliyah was because he was caught having sex with her when she was 15. And I think he was 28 in his tour bus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of like something out of Jane Austen where, okay, you got to get married to make sure that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't get arrested for statutory rape or for being a rake or what have you. But then the stories about R. Kelly, became like even more troubling, stories about him going to high schools and malls, where he and his entourage of his, you know, his safety duty would troll around for teenage girls. And he would invite them to his studio and he would have multiple rooms where he would be having sex with girls as young as 14. And it all like really came to a head when the infamous P tape came out, in which R. Kelly is seen having sex with what turns out or allegedly is a 14-year-old girl who he also is seen urinating on, including in her mouth, and an older person. I think she was maybe 19 at the time, and they were also engaged in a threesome. And so,
what year was this, Leslie? When did the P tape come out?
When did the P tape come out?
2000, right? Like the trial was in 2008.
So. Yeah, so that was like, so I want to say the P tape came out maybe in 2002 because there were significant delays in the trial. And so, yeah, so that's kind of the background. So you have this man who is seen as a musical genius, who is heralded as kind of like a hero and a star within the African-American community. And at the same time, you have these rumors about these crimes and sexual indiscretions and his preying on teenage girls and young women. And so then that is basically what I think the documentary actually like forces you to grapple with, right? It's like we can talk about things like what's that called? The bystander effect, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, it's like, you know, people decide, oh yeah, someone else is going to help this people, you know, that victim. I think of it as like, I term this the chicken head effect, right? It's kind of like, you're like, okay, we have this one person who's supposedly who's an icon within our community and who we don't want to see brought down. And then you have these young girls who want to be famous, want to be loved, want whatever, right? And so instead of blaming him for his predatory behavior, right, we blame these young girls, mm-hmm. right? And we say, well, you know, it's because they put themselves out there. Never mind the fact that he actually sought them out.
Well, what was your take on was it Chance the Rapper who said, you know, talked about the adultification of Black girls?
Yeah, and, that's a thing.
And it was an interesting idea. Like, it had me thinking, because, like, this wasn't surprising, like, that he's a child predator. We all knew it. And, you know, I was listening to R. Kelly, like, over the winter holidays, right? It's not like I still stream him. He still got a check because of my behavior. Mm-hmm. Why is anybody surprised? Is this even a surprise? And why didn't we do anything earlier?
Well, to be fair, I mean, I think for a lot of people, it's not a surprise. And a lot of people have been sort of cancel R. Kelly for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Jim DeRogatis, the music journalist from, I think, the Sun-Times in Chicago, was writing about this, you know, since the early to mid 2000s. And, you know, I mean, I lived in Chicago for a long time and people are always like, oh, people in Chicago knew. I mean, I wasn't that, like, tapped into what was happening on the ground in Chicago. Like, I found out about it via news stories. But I have for a while, and I sort of, you know, have put down R. Kelly and just kind of like, yeah, this is not cool. I mean, Dave Chappelle was doing skits about it, like, you know, savagely calling it out. So, I mean, I feel like there is,
do you think he was really, like, was that really savagely calling it out? Because, you know, I read this piece in the New York Times that said, you know, it turned it into a bit of a joke. And then R. Kelly kind of jumped in on it in a way. And he kind of pulled the Trump where you're given sort of egregiously bad news about somebody, but there's an air of ridicule and we don't know whether to treat it as serious or a joke. And it ultimately ends up trivializing the whole situation. Because, I mean, he was, you know,
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I understood it as definitely like a mocking critique. Like it wasn't mm-hmm. sort of a loving, this is just a joke kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, I also think, like, in thinking about Chappelle's treatment of that, I mean, I think that if it was definitively known that that was a 14-year-old girl in that video, which I think is what's left out of the Chappelle skit, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, this is a child, like she's below the age of consent, mm-hmm. right? I don't know that Chappelle would have approached that in the same exact way, right? You know, if you have consenting adults who are engaging in, you know, what we think of as deviant forms of sexual behavior, right? And when I say we, I don't mean us as individuals, I mean society as a whole, then okay, fine. It's easier to make fun of than if you're like, oh, hey, this is a 14-year-old girl. So that's number one. And then number two, right? And one of the things that the documentary says over and over and over again is that R. Kelly actually became this master of hiding in plain sight. He was like, oh, you gonna make it a joke? I'm gonna make it a joke,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You're gonna accuse me of it? I'm gonna wink and nod at it. I'm gonna write a song about it. Mm-hmm. And people are gonna be like, oh, he wouldn't write a song about it if he was really doing it, right?
Mm-hmm. Let's go, Corey.
Oh, no. I mean, I think in some ways it's, yeah. I mean, I guess one of the interesting things about this is I feel like a lot of people are sort of not pointing fingers, but there's a sense of who do we blame? What, you know, mm-hmm. where do we lay the cause on this? And I guess, you know, I wrestle with that too, because I'm not quite sure, right? It's sort of like, well, you know, people have been calling for boycotts of his work for a while. And I think, you know, some people have been engaged in boycotting R. Kelly for a while. And outside of that, I mean, we also, I feel like, to what extent do we have to think about, you know, local law enforcement and, mm-hmm. you know, his people on his team. You know, I mean, feels like there. I mean, I guess there's like a big story and a small story in terms of blame, but I feel like there actually are very much, very clearly direct people, like, you know, people on his team who facilitated this kind of action. I mean, obviously him, you know, as well. And in some ways, I feel like, you know, bigger stories around, like, we as a society kind of let those people get lost in the shuffle, you know, like,
maybe.
I don't know.
That was the thing to me that was what was most disturbing for me in watching the documentary, is there were all of these people who were there saying, yeah, he did this and yeah, he did that. And but then you would listen to them talk about how they were complicit in him doing that. Mm-hmm. And that was what was disturbing, because I was like, oh, I knew he did that, but I did not know that you were going to the malls and going to those 15-year-old girls and saying, R. Kelly wants to talk to you. I did not know that you were a witness to the things that were going on in the studio or in his house. Like, there was even one guy who was like, yeah, I mean, what's so crazy is that during that whole time I was working for him, I would look at these girls and I would just be like, yeah, they're stupid to let themselves be treated this way. And I never once thought to blame him, right? To think about how, right? And that, and it's because he's paying your paycheck. That's why. And it's because he's R. Kelly and you enjoy the status of like working for him and the fringe benefits from working for him. And I think that these are things that we see over and over and over again, right? When it's easier to blame the victim than it is to like call the perpetrator out, that's something that we see over and over again.
But are we all a little bit guilty? I mean, like,
no, because I never listen to R. Kelly.
Like, if you listen,
I listen to R. Kelly too, but I stopped. So actually, in some ways, no, I don't feel guilty, Joe.
I mean, if you like,
I wasn't streaming him over the vacation.
What's that?
Right. Only one person on this conversation was streaming him over the holiday.
Well, like, but let's say, if you've been listening to R. Kelly in the last 10 years, because let's be honest, the whole thing about her being a minor, it was almost like it was known and there was like a collective blind spot. Like, I'm not the only one who's listened to his music. And like, to it in the last 10 years, have you been, are you complicit in your own little way? I'm beginning to feel, yeah.
So Joe, I mean, so that's really complicated, right? Because there are all these people who are like, well, so number one, like the girl who is the alleged victim and her parents, all they deny that it's her, right? Mm-hmm. So if they're denying that it's her, right? And if R. Kelly is saying it's not him, right? And then, right, he gets exonerated. He doesn't get convicted on the charge. Then you can say to yourself, well, those were just allegations.
Yeah, like, right? Trump in Russia.
Yeah, those are just allegations. And you know what I mean? Like, you should not, you know what I mean? Guilty, no, innocent until proven guilty, and he was not proven guilty. So you know what? I actually feel good moving on and still listening to his music. Like, to be fair, I haven't listened to R. Kelly, in large part because I've never been a fan of R. Kelly's, right? Like, it would have been harder for me to boycott R. Kelly if I had been a fan, if his music had been such a large part of the soundtrack of my life, like, for example, Michael Jackson's music is.
Which, right? There's a documentary about to come out about him.
Yes, I know. Whoa, and that's gonna hurt.
But like, say with, I mean, I feel like we all know about Michael Jackson. Like, if I'm to be honest, like, I feel like I know about Michael Jackson.
Well, I don't feel like I know about Michael.
Here we go. Here we go.
Right?
Here's
No, but that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, so for me, Michael Jackson presented as such a much more sympathetic character than R. Kelly did, right?
Yes.
And number one, right? And also number two, I think also because it might be that because Michael Jackson also presented as so asexual. It's like so, it's so hard for me to think of him as a sexual being, right? And so all of these allegations, and also he also seemed so frail. So it was like, did he do it? Was he the victim? I don't know.
I mean, I think the answer to both those questions can be yes. Yes, he was the victim of something. I'm not sure what. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with R. Kelly, because you get too many drinks in me and it's like a party stream conversation that would go on for a while. It's like the sort of reclamation of Michael Jackson, right? Like probably the best thing for his reputation was dying, because it's like, wait, we've all forgot about that whole thing with like child molestation stuff. And because even the most generous reading is, and clearly this is wildly inappropriate behavior, right?
Yes.
Like the most generous reading gives me pause.
Yeah. there's no good scenario in all of this story.
There's no good scenario, right? But I think, you know, there was just a viral video of that UCLA gymnasts, right? The awesome floor routine that had all these Michael Jackson songs in it. And I was just like, wow, we are really not going to be remembering this. We're engaged in like a collective forgetting of this Michael Jackson stuff, which in some ways is actually interesting. People do stuff on like collective memory, but like collective forgetting is also really compelling. And I think, you know, the R. Kelly stuff, there was also like a collective forgetting. But now it'll be interesting to see. Like, I don't get the sense that we're going to be, you know, collectively allowed to forget the R. Kelly stuff. And it does, it's an interesting question. It may make for an interesting, maybe a one-off publication, Joe, like that has a big idea of like why Michael Jackson has managed to get away with it.
Well, we shall see people feel after the documentary comes out.
But the documentary is certainly, I mean, hopefully, maybe it'll introduce new information, but we already know enough to be like, wait, why is he like, you know, getting away with it? And
Here's the thing. I feel like I don't know, right? And maybe it's because his victims, right, or alleged victims had to sign those non-disclosure agreements, right? So I feel like I don't know. I know that there are allegations.
Do you not want to know, Leslie?
No, but what I'm saying is that's a very good question. And that's why I brought up, maybe it's easy for me to just be like, I just cut out R. Kelly because I've never been a fan. I haven't been a super fan to begin with. Right. So that was easy. It's going to be painful for me to give up Michael Jackson.
Like, I would never play Michael Jackson at a party. I'm not doing active streaming. I mean, I'm not vocal about boycott Michael Jackson, but I have enough pause already to be like, it feels like a great loss. It is a great loss, but I don't know.
Here's a question. Are we allowed to listen to the Jackson 5 and Michael Jackson pre-allegations?
I mean, this gets into those, like, can you separate the art from the artist?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe what we should do is, like, when the Michael Jackson documentary comes out, we'll all reconvene, we'll watch it and all reconvene and be like, okay.
Good idea.
We're gonna bust out this Michael Jackson versus R. Kelly thing.
Okay.
Two things that I find interesting. One, there's a transactional element of morality, isn't there? Like, it makes that quite plain. Like, being moral rectitude is difficult when you got something to lose. I'm speaking of myself and R. Kelly, not Leslie and Michael Jackson at this point. But and then the second thing is, isn't it interesting how perspective filters facts when we think about changing people's minds? We knew about I submit that, like, I was quite convinced about R. Kelly for years, as I am with Michael Jackson. But those facts, I was able, just on an emotional level or through perspective, to just be completely blind to them until everything came to a head. It's like this whole Me Too thing, you know, made it unignorable. And it's interesting because, you know, we're social scientists. We often think about changing people's minds by presenting them with new facts. But, you know, if there's one thing that's for sure that we've learned in the past few years, it's like people can see a fact, acknowledge a fact, but absolutely refuse to process it.
It's like the who you're going to believe, me or your lying eyes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's also a story around what's the appropriate call to action, or like what's the actionable behavior as, you know, music consumers or cultural consumers, right? So it's like, well, you know, if you bought an R. Kelly album, like he's already made that money. So what's being achieved by not listening to it?
You know, well, it's like,
and I say this as someone who like doesn't listen. I guess, right. You know, what's being, you're sort of a symbolic, you're not endorsing this. But yeah, I mean, I don't know.
So here's a response to that, Corey. So in watching the documentary, right, there seemed to be quite a few songs in his catalog that were basically created like in response to his behavior, right? So it's like the creative process was fueled by this
child predation,
immoral, disgusting, in many cases, illegal behavior, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, right? So like, you know, if Picasso was a serial killer and he painted one of his masterpieces in the blood of one of his victims, right? Is it okay to still think of it as a masterpiece?
Or what about that child TV show star in England? Remember that British guy who it turned out was like molesting tons of kids on his show?
Oh yeah.
You know, like should we be watching his back catalog too? You know what I mean? I don't.
He wasn't even that funny. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.